This was a battle of top-level experts on both sides. There were very well-versed, high-powered legal help helping the governor and helping the prosecution and Prosecutor Dan Webb. What, in the end, might the jury have listened to come to their decision?
Well, we hope the evidence, right? I expect that the jury was impressed by the lawyers, but at the end of the day, most juries, most of the time, worked their way through the evidence, tried to figure out what made sense to them, what tells a coherent story, and ruled on that basis.
After 7 months of all of that evidence, though, how difficult is it for a jury to sit down, sift through all of that? In fact, the jury instructions were, 150 pages in total. That's a huge job.
It is a huge job, and that's one of the reasons why I expect that the judge, when faced with the problems with the jurors that you alluded to before, was not very excited at the idea of starting everything over again, declaring a mistrial. She decided to go ahead with the jurors, the 10 jurors who remained, plus the two alternates.
Why was that choice made? Just to salvage the case?
It's not just to salvage the case, although that's surely part of it. But it is, the evidence has gone in once, the jurors have invested an awful lot of time in this, and we hope at the end of the road, the judge concluded that these 10 jurors who remained after the two were excused, the 10 jurors who remained really would be able to start again with two newcomers and begin their deliberations all over again. And if so, then it was the right decision.
But it may leave an appeal window open for the defense.
Oh, it surely leaves an appeal window open for the defense. In fact, my understanding is that when Governor Ryan's lead attorney, Dan Webb, came out to talk about today's verdict, one of the first things he said was they'd be appealing. I mean, they'll first move for a new trial, but that they would be appealing if that was unsuccessful on the ground, among other things, of the unusual developments during the jury deliberations.
What are some of those other things, those other windows that may open and may be discussed in an appeal?
Oh, there's usually all manner of things that convicted defendants will challenge on appeal. They'll challenge evidentiary rulings. They'll challenge pretrial rulings that didn't go in their favor. Many of these issues are ones that are pretty common to most criminal cases, but the headline issue, I am guessing, is going to be the two excused jurors.
This really shone a huge spotlight on the importance of selecting a jury in the first place, and the allegations that came out were that they misrepresented themselves in the initial jury selection process. You know, what can lawyers take from this case?
Well, as far as we know, this doesn't happen very often. We usually think that people lie to get off juries, not lie to get on them. And so most jurisdictions, I think, don't have a practice of doing background checks of the jurors who are selected. Now, in some jurisdictions they do. Boston, for example, apparently a case like this happened not too long ago, and now they do background checks of the jurors. But if you're a lawyer in a what could be a long and drawn-out case, you might want to think carefully about doing some checking to the extent you can about the juror's background.
And I'm sure the process would change from your garden variety civil case that may not get much press attention to something with as huge a profile as this.
Sure. I mean, all these cases, it's all about resources. There's 100 things you can spend your time on, and as a lawyer, you're usually just trying to figure out what's the most important thing to devote what time and energy you have.
There were concerns when the first jury was deliberating about their demeanor and whether they were getting along, much less able to come to a conclusion. There were many questions for the judge. Things seemed to have changed once the reconstituted jury began their deliberations. What may have changed?
Well, obviously personalities may have been the main thing that changed. And I'm not saying the two jurors who were excused were the source of the problems, but it may have been quite contentious in the jury room just based on personalities of who was there, whether they were excused or whether they remained. But clearly this is going to be an issue that the defense is going to spotlight on appeal, which is, gee, the jury didn't seem to be able to decide before, then you get rid of two people who, for all we know, may have favored the governor's view of the evidence and replaced them with two others, and now they come back guilty on all counts.
The sentencing is now set for August 4th. What happens between now and then, and do you think there will be a sentence on August 4th?
That's really hard to say. Typically, there's a pre-sentence report that occurs before your typical defendant is sentenced. This is not your typical defendant, obviously, and so whether they'll stick to this timetable or not is, I sure don't know.
Andy Leopold, a professor at the U of I College of Law, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.